Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 15, Text 24. Translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Translation. Factually, this is all due to the supreme will of the Lord, the personality of Godhead. Sometimes people kill one another, and at other times they protect one another. Purport. According to the anthropologists, I believe it's in the BBT style sheet. No, it wasn't there, it was elsewhere. Anyway, Jayadvaita Swami, I believe it was, explained that Prabhupada often uses the word anthropologist to mean people who subscribe to Darwin's theory of evolution. It's not exactly the same thing in standard English usage. According to the anthropologists, there is nature's law of struggle for existence and survival of the fittest. But they do not know that behind the law of nature is the supreme direction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is confirmed that the law of nature is executed under the direction of the Lord. Thank you. I don't like that. Tend to lose my voice. Thank you. What's that verse? Can anyone say? Anyone? Someone was saying? Who is that? What was just said? In the Bhagavad Gita, it is said that nature's law is executed under the direction of the Supreme Lord. Maya dhyakshena prakritihi. Okay, that's good. Whenever, therefore, there is peace in the world, it must be known that it is due to the goodwill of the Lord. And whenever there is upheaval in the world, it is also due to the supreme will of the Lord. Not a blade of grass moves without the will of the Lord. Whenever, therefore, there is disobedience of the established rules enacted by the Lord, there is war between men and nations. The surest way to the path of peace, therefore, is dovetailing everything to the established rule of the Lord. The established rule is that whatever we do, whatever we eat, whatever we sacrifice, or whatever we give in charity must be done to the full satisfaction of the Lord. Which reminds us of another Bhagavad Gita verse, namely, say it, Yad karoshi, yad juhoshi, you said, dadasi yad, yad tapasyasi. Alright, everything should be offered to Krishna. The established rule, yeah. No one should do anything, eat anything, sacrifice anything, or give anything in charity against the will of the Lord. Discretion is the better part of valor. Do you know what that means? It's an English saying. It's probably derived from... Where's that derived from? Shakespeare, is it? Any idea? Sounds Shakespearean, doesn't it? Discretion is the better part of valor. What does valor mean? It means... courage, braveness, any other synonyms? Chivalrousness. Yeah. So, it's good to be bold, but not brash. It means blindly bold. One should also discriminate and know. There is a time, as is said in this verse, there is a time for killing and a time for making peace. One must learn how, this is a very important statement which is just coming up, please listen to it very carefully. One must learn how to discriminate between actions which may be pleasing to the Lord and those which may not be pleasing to the Lord. I'll read that again. One must learn how to discriminate between actions which may be pleasing to the Lord and those which may not be pleasing to the Lord. An action is thus judged by the Lord's pleasure or displeasure. There is no room for personal whims. We must always be guided by the pleasure of the Lord. Such action is called yoga karmasu kosalam, or actions performed which are linked with the Supreme Lord. That is the art of doing a thing perfectly. An important part of what is called philosophy in English, or darshan, tattvagyan, is attempting to understand cause, the nature of causes, and finding meaning in existence. Of course, some philosophies, they conclude in meaninglessness. That's not really a philosophy. Ascertaining causes, because to understand the cause is not always very easy. If we see an apple, we think that it came from a tree. Probably none of you here saw, or not many of you here saw, an apple tree, because they don't, as far as I know, they don't grow in South India. In Himachal Pradesh, you get apple trees. But you know that apples come from trees. Once I was in Udupi with a group of devotees from the Delhi area, and someone presented me with a pineapple. So I was somewhat surprised, because, well, it was a few years ago. I didn't expect to see pineapples in that part of the world. So I asked him where he got it from, and he was a student in Manipal, but he was from Delhi. And he said to me, oh, he got it from his own tree. They grow it themselves from his own tree. I said, oh, that's good. How many pineapple trees do you have? See, none of you laughed, because you don't know that pineapples don't grow on trees. Who's seen a pineapple growing? Where? In your village. Where's your village? Really? So they do grow it here. In Assam, northeast Bengal, you'll see. They make the land like this, and on hills, and it grows up. It looks something like an aloe plant. Grows up like this. You can cut it and it'll grow again, but not on trees. There's no pineapple tree. But he had presumed that, well, it's a fruit. Fruit grows on trees. And he said he brought it from his own garden. So he must have, just like you have a mango garden, you must have a pineapple trees. But pineapples don't grow on trees. So ascertaining the cause may be difficult. Who would think that butterflies come from caterpillars? They look quite different. Those house flies that crawl in your nose when you're trying to go to sleep at midday, trying to take a little rest. They come from maggots, which come from eggs. Who would think? Who could imagine? So ascertaining the cause, It may not be very easy. Often the cause is very different from the effect. So, Srimad Bhagavatam is the perfect exposition of the ultimate cause. The ultimate cause is Krishna. Here, Arjuna and Yudhishthira are discussing at the end of their lives, they're discussing some of the chief events in their lives. They had very eventful lives. You want an exciting life? Go join the Pandavas. They had a very exciting life. So did Duryodhana, for that matter. But excitement isn't the criteria. They had a very exciting life, and not just in some video game, it was the real thing for them. So Arjuna is examining, what is the cause? How did all these things happen? Even now people are wondering, how is it possible if Krishna is the supreme controller and he is favorable to his devotees, he's known as Bhaktavatsala, then how is it that the Pandavas went through so many difficulties? So it requires a deep understanding of the meaning of life to understand this. To understand that Krishna gives difficulties to his devotees so that they can become free from all difficulties eternally. That is Krishna's mercy on them. In one purport, Srila Prabhupada comments on the Shuchinam Srimatam Gehe Yoga Brashto Vijayate, on the statement of Krishna himself in Bhagavad Gita, that the fallen yogis, they take birth in pious families. And Prabhupada said that those who are more favored by the Lord, they take birth in completely helpless situations so they can become completely dependent on Krishna. So who's more favored? Yesterday I spoke at some length about what it means to be a Brahmana, to be born in a high... Those of you who want to know more about Brahman, meaning of a Brahmin, you can get that recording and listen to that. I'm not going to speak the same thing now, exactly. But that's considered a high birth. But then we find in Srimad Bhagavatam, Janmaishwarya Shruta Shribhir, Edamanamadah Puman, Naivahatyabhitatung Vaitvam Akinchana Gochara. That high birth, all the boons, all the facilities of a pious birth, pious birth in an aristocratic family, rich family, intelligent, educated, Shruta means here educated in Vedas, not ass education. Shruta, Shribhya, again opulence or bodily beauty. Kunti Devi says that these are obstacles to being a completely surrendered devotee to Krishna, because people who have these facilities, they tend to become proud. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Dinere adhik daya kare Bhagavan, Kulin pandit dhani boro abhiman. Krishna favors the fallen more. Because those who do have these facilities, birth in a high family, learning, wealth, they tend to be very proud also. So it's very, there's one point is being made repeatedly in the discussion of the Pandavas. Bhishma made this point, and Kunti makes this point, now Arjuna makes this point. It's very difficult to understand Krishna's plan. It's very difficult to understand what exactly his plan is. Because life is so complex, and we tend to see ourselves in terms of the particular situation that we're in now, but we don't know how we got in this situation. How is it that I was born in such and such a family with such and such a mentality and such a background? What did I do to get in that situation? And what is Krishna's plan for me? What will happen in future? It's very difficult to understand. When the Pandavas were born, Most probably, when Dhritarashtra got the news, he was very happy also. When Rama was born, Kaikeyi was very happy. She had nothing against Ram up until the time Mantara poisoned her mind. She loved Ram, but then her mind changed. No one could have predicted. It's very just like here it said, sometimes people kill one another and sometimes they protect one another. You don't know. You can be friends today, enemies tomorrow, and then again friends. That's the history of the world. Just like you see in Europe, I don't know so much about the political history of India, but you'll find the countries that they're fighting against, England and Germany will fight against France, and then England and France will fight against Germany, and it's very difficult to, they'll change, the alliances will change. In that recent war in Yugoslavia, what used to be called Yugoslavia, there were three camps, the Serbs, the Croats, and the Muslims. In Bosnia, there were three camps. So one day the Muslims and the Serbs will be fighting against the Croats, and it'll be the Croats and the Muslims against the Serbs. And then it'd be always changing, day to day, according to convenience. So to understand, of course, for devotees, they also get in various situations. But a devotee has faith that he's protected by Krishna, so his situation is somewhat different. Devotee can get in a very, very complex political situation, taken from a non-devotional perspective. As is often done. Arjuna looks to be just another person who got involved in a big mess in this material world. It's, of course, the story of the Mahabharata is very complex, but there are many such stories, real life stories. It's often said that truth is more strange than fiction. How people get in very, often people come and tell me, actually nowadays I don't like to listen to it because it's, people come and tell me their problems, and you know, it's just so complicated. And sometimes it's just so stupid, you know. It's just like pretty much all the time, just people, just like one ego against another, and someone's plans for sense gratification come up against someone else's plans for sense gratification, and they're both convinced they're right. I am right because I, it's me, it's my interest. So, life is very complex. What is the ultimate cause behind everything? There is Krishna's will, directly or indirectly. Prabhupada stated in one purport that Krishna has made such people as Hitler, Stalin, Mussolini. These were all big figures during the time when Srila Prabhupada was in, well, during most of Prabhupada's life, or what you could say during what would be considered the prime of life in his household of life. These were major world figures who were changing the shape of the world and the history of the world. Prabhupada said, he raises them up, they perform some activities. What is that? Jagat kshayaya ahitaha. The demoniac, they perform activities which are for the destruction of the world and the non-benefit of the world. But they're also, Napoleon, Hitler, they're also given that position by Krishna through his material energy. And they do some demoniac activities. People suffer. Why is that? Because people have performed sinful activities. And so they get a reaction for that. There's so much talk in the world about stopping terrorism. But almost everyone in the world is participating in terrorism. Almost everyone who's eating chicken and mutton, beef, they're all engaging in terrorism because the animals are tortured and then slaughtered. It's a mass enterprise. In India, certainly over 1 million chickens must be killed every day. If you consider the number of people in India, if you take, there's more than 1,000 million people in India. And if you say one chicken killed for every 1,000 Indians at a very conservative estimate every day, then that means at least 1 million chickens are killed every day in India. And they're kept, you see how they're kept? They're kept in these poultry farms and very horrible conditions throughout their life. So that's terrorism. The animals are tortured throughout their lives and then killed. So it's the terrorism that they're so afraid of. It's a consequence of the sinful activities that people perform. Srila Prabhupada said that when Srila Prabhupada was in America, the Vietnam War was going on, which is practically forgotten nowadays. But Prabhupada said that, Prabhupada was preaching among the hippies, and they were against the Vietnam War because they're any time they can get a little piece of paper in the mail saying, "Dear Mr. So-and-so, it's time to pack your bags and go on a holiday to Vietnam. And don't worry, if you get killed, we'll give you a wrap your body in an American flag and give you a salute. And bye-bye." So Prabhupada said that because they're killing so many animals, that the flower of their youth, the young men, they are being sent to slaughter, just as like they're sending the animals. So if we tell this to people, especially in the West, where they have, well, now they have maybe the most rudimentary idea of karma, but in India, because of the culture, there's more idea of that karma, but people couldn't understand that. They couldn't relate that. How is it that because we're killing animals, what's it got to do with Vietnam? They couldn't work it out. Causes are, they may be very subtle. But the fact is that if we cause suffering, then suffering comes to us. And if the society is organized for a mass torture, then the whole society will have to suffer en masse also. So these are some of the topics being discussed, that ultimately behind it all is the supreme will of the Lord. Does that mean that He wants us to suffer? Is this what is being stated here? Krishna wants us to suffer? No. Krishna doesn't want us to suffer. Therefore, He sends a Hitler and a Stalin and Janma Mrityu Jaya Vyadhi and makes a society in which suffering is instituted. In modern life, suffering is instituted. You have to go to school at a very early age and study for exams. That's suffering. You have to go to work. In the modern age, no one likes their job. No one likes to do it. You have to work long hours. Everyone in Bangalore is suffering. Everyone looks so miserable. Why is that? What is the cause of that? Because they are miserable. And why are they miserable? Because the only goal of life is money. And no one has nearly as much as they want. So there's no good feeling between people. Just get money. That's all. There's practically no other aim of life for anyone. And of course then, because other people want your money, then they advertise, "Enjoy yourself. Drink this beer." The person who's advertising the beer doesn't give a damn whether you enjoy or not. He wants your money. But he advertises, "You will be happy by drinking this beer." And he gets your money. And then you have less money. And you wish, "I had more money. Then I could buy more beer." Like this. Krishna doesn't want us to be miserable. But because we don't take Krishna's prescription for living happily, then we have to suffer in this world, and Krishna arranges for that, so that at some point in time we can come to the realization that I'm not meant for suffering. Why am I suffering? One should begin to think. One should question. It's not enough simply to be nominally religious. I am a Hindu. I am a Muslim. Or whatever. This is not what we get from Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. We don't find Krishna says, join the BJP. Or Gaur se kaho ham Hindu hai. We don't say that. Krishna doesn't say that. Arjuna was already a Hindu. Of course, there was no such idea of Hinduism in those days. But if you want to put a modern designation on Arjuna, he was a Hindu. But he was confused. So Krishna explained to him, what are the causes of confusion? Confusion means lack of proper knowledge. So Krishna gave him that knowledge, but it's somewhat complex to understand all the different tattvas. We find again and again in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna speaks about Shraddha. Shraddha va labhade jnanam. One who has faith gets knowledge. Ashadadhana purusha dharmasyasya parantapa aprapya maang nevartante mrityu sansara bhagna. Those who are not faithful on this path, Krishna says, they do not attain me. They return to birth and death. But then Krishna doesn't say, just believe. Faith is required. But Krishna explains to Arjuna also all the different tattvas, or categories to be understood. Krishna explains all of these briefly. Bhagavad Gita is a brief overview of Ishvara, Prakriti, Kala, Karma, and what's the other one? Ishvara, Kala, Jiva. So Bhagavad Gita is a brief overview of how these different tattvas interact with each other, and practical direction on how, understanding all of these, one can live in this world under the direction of the Supreme Lord. As this is stated here in this verse, all that we have seen in our lives, ultimately, we're all working within the will of the Supreme Lord, as Krishna said to Arjuna. Nimitta matram bhava sabhya sajit. You're very expert in fighting. You can shoot your arrows with both hands. But for all your skill, Arjuna, Krishna told Arjuna that you can only become an instrument. If you consider yourself an instrument, that is the perfection of Arjuna's activities, to understand what is Krishna's plan and to act within this. Srila Prabhupada writes here, one must learn how to discriminate between actions which may be pleasing to the Lord and those which may not be pleasing to the Lord. Maybe Arjuna thought that I won't fight, Krishna will be pleased. I'm saying, Nayotya, I'm not going to fight, Krishna told. Sorry, Arjuna told Govinda, he may have thought, well, Govinda will be very pleased. You see, I've become very philosophical and very saintly, and Krishna's going to be pleased with my decision not to fight, because Krishna is good, and now I'm being good. He might have thought that. I mean, after all, Arjuna was a devotee. It wasn't that when Krishna told him, Manmana Bhava Madbhakto, he thought, wow, that's a great idea. I never thought of that one before. He's already there, life after life. He can't do anything but think of Krishna and be his devotee. So he wasn't thinking of, when Arjuna thought, I won't fight, he wasn't thinking, no, you know, this Krishna, he's really set to, I'm gonna show him. What does he think, engaging us all in this fight? He's not fighting, why should I fight? Yeah, you'd fight, I'll hold the reins. He didn't have such a rebellious attitude. He thought he was being good. But Krishna told him, no, it's not good. And why is it not good? Ultimately, because Krishna wanted the fight. Of course, Krishna had very good reasons for that. It's not that Krishna's whimsical. But Krishna wanted that fight. It's very difficult to understand. Arjuna couldn't understand it. Why does Krishna want me to fight with my guru? Are you going to go and shoot arrows at your guru, Krishna? Would you do that? Could you do it? It's very difficult to understand. But ultimately, Krishna had that plan. We have to understand what is the plan of Krishna and get in line with it. How can we understand what is the plan of Krishna? The general idea is given in Shastra. That is the general idea. What is the meaning? What is the nature of this world? Why we're in this world? What is our duty within this world? And specific instructions are given in Shastra. So that's the general guideline is given in Shastra. As Arjuna famously, sorry, Krishna famously said in Bhagavad Gita, Ya Shastra Vidim Utsrija Vartate Kamakarataha, acting according to our own will. Nasa siddhim avapnoti, nasukam na paramgatam. One who does not act according to Shastra, but acts whimsically according to their own desire, they cannot attain perfection, nor happiness, nor the supreme direction. And how is that will to be Arjuna thought, well, I'm talking about dharma. I'm not going outside Shastra. But Krishna, by saying this, he implied that Arjuna's idea not to fight is impelled by his own whim. It's not the Shastric conclusion. In Shastra, there are so many directives for so many different persons, places, times, conditions. For a Kshatriya not to fight in a situation where he's supposed to fight, that is abominable. He should fight. In a situation where he's required to fight, he must fight. For him not to do so is highly sinful. So all these points have to be understood. What is the plan of Krishna? The general plan is given in Shastra. And the specific plan that we may have to learn from our personal guide, our guru, will tell it. Because often, life being so complex, there are many directions, and often the directions, they may be apparently contradictory. It's called dharma sankat. When you're in a situation, if I do this, it's according to Shastra, but it's against another Shastric injunction. And if I do the other thing, it's this. Either way, you have to break some dharmic law. That was what Arjuna's situation. He knew as a Kshatriya he was supposed to fight, but then how can you attack your gurus in battle? And how can you fight in a situation which is going to devastate the world? That was Arjuna's dilemma. And the whole Mahabharata is full of that, demonstrating situations where you... What do you do? What should someone do in such a circumstance? Krishna told that story of the Brahmana who made the vow never to tell a lie. But when the robbers came and they asked, did you see the person we're chasing? He's got all that money, we want to kill him and take his money. Did you see him? Yes, I saw him. Where did he go? He went that way. The robbers went and killed a man. And the Brahmin, he didn't tell a lie. He kept his vow. He went to hell. Because in that situation, he should have told a lie. He kept his vow throughout his life. But by keeping his vow and by being truthful, he went to hell. Because in some circumstances, telling a lie is required. And in some circumstances, to tell the truth is sinful. And to tell a lie is pious. Not normally, but sometimes it may be. So therefore, we must learn how to discriminate between actions which may be pleasing to the Lord and those which may not be pleasing to the Lord. Anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya varjanam. In the path of surrender, the important, the two factors which guide our activities, we have to judge. We have to do that which is favorable for devotional service and avoid those activities which will impede our advancement in devotional service. So there are general guidelines given in Shastra. What should we do that will nourish our devotional service? So that begins rising early in the morning. That is favorable for advancement in devotional service. Sleeping late, that is not favorable. So so many rules and regulations are given so that will help us to advance in devotional service. So one must learn how to discriminate. I was asked to speak something about Brahminical initiation. Well, like I said, yesterday for 2 hours I spoke about on that subject. Srila Prabhupada wanted his disciple, he wanted to create a class of brahmanas to lead the world. The world is like a body without a head. It's like a ghost. There's no proper direction. So brahmana means, Prabhupada wanted to create a class of brahmanas, means persons who are very learned in Shastra and who by their activity, by the way they live their life and by the way they instruct others, they can give proper guidance to others to be the leaders of society. So they have to be ideal. They have to know Shastra, otherwise what's the meaning? And you have to know how to implement that, and we have to live that ourselves. And a brahmana doesn't sleep until 6 o'clock in the morning. A brahmana must be up early in Brahma Muhurta, must live an ideal life. Brahmana is always engaged in the service of Krishna. So this class of brahmana is required who studies very deeply the imports of Shastra and can explain all these points. Sometimes people kill one another and at other times they protect one another. So of course that means one group, because you can't protect someone who's been killed, but that means like a group of people, just like there was the Kauravas and the Pandavas. Sometimes they were together, sometimes they were opposed. The Kaurava, when the Duryodhana and company were captured by the Gandharvas, then Bhima, the Pandavas came across them. Bhima thought, great! Well, we were thinking we had to fight them, but our job's done. It's already there, caught and they're captured. So our job's done. And Yudhishthira said, no, this is our family prestige. See, they're the same family as us. Remember, we're cousins. So even the Gandharva king, Chitrarath, I think, he was the friend of Yudhishthira, but Yudhishthira fought with him. No, it's my brother, you can't capture him. So they were together. Of course, Duryodhana forgot that exactly approximately 1 second after that. And he remained totally, he took it as an insult. He was already insulted and he took it as a greater insult that the Pandavas had released him. But that's the way it is. Life is very strange. You can never understand what will happen. Just like now in Bangalore, there's a fight going on between some pundit sitting on a hill and some others who are sitting in this room. But you never know. They might be together again at some point in time. You can't say. Difficult to say. I mean, we don't think like that now, but you know, if there was a change of heart, genuine change of heart, and I mean, Prabhupada, he was the one reason he was open, he was successful in spreading Krishna consciousness is that he was willing to accept people, even people who behaved obnoxiously and atrociously toward him. Actually, we don't know. There are many things in Prabhupada Lilamrita. Yeah, they're not there. They're not written there. Some of the things that Prabhupada's disciples, some of the things they did to him, they're not written there. But Prabhupada, he was willing to forgive at the appropriate time. Now is not a, just like Arjuna, he was willing to forgive, but at the inappropriate time. If Duryodhana had said, okay, all right, I accept, I'm a jerk and I'll be a good boy from now on, and then it would have been okay. It would have been accepted. But Duryodhana was never ready for that. And therefore, there was no question of forgiving a person who is not repentant and willing to change himself. But then if he is repentant and willing to change himself, then you can forgive him. There should be no grudge kept, at least among Vaishnavas. In other cases, just like a murderer may say, well, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to do that. But still, he has to be punished by law. So exactly, again, how to apply all these different cases and injunctions. That's why we see that sometimes people become confused when they say, well, Prabhupada, sometimes he said one thing, then he did something else, and then how do you understand it? And we find within our movement there are controversies. Just like we find in Srila Prabhupada's books that he spoke very much about the social subordination of women. But then in his dealings with his disciples, he was often much more liberal with his women disciples than what it appears the standard that he expected from what was written in his books. So then how do you understand this? Well, some people say that, well, the books, what's written in the books, that's not very important. That's just some kind of, some cultural things which Prabhupada put in his books, but it's not really meant for us. We should follow what he did. And others say, well, Prabhupada said that his books are the law books for the next 10,000 years. And even in his instructions, he said things like the children, the daughters of our devotees, they shouldn't go to school, they should remain at home, and they should be taught two main things, how to cook and how to be very chaste. And so others say, you see, well, Prabhupada, he dealt with his women disciples in a way according to their conditioning. But actually, Srila Prabhupada wanted to bring in a much more traditional model of society. So there's a disagreement, because there's an apparent contradiction between what Prabhupada said and what he did. And I'm just giving that as an example. So then again, we have to understand the intent. Why did Srila Prabhupada do that? Why did he sometimes act in ways which were different to the ideal that he wanted to institute? Or even if we agree that the ideal is to introduce what we could call a very traditional society according to the old Indian culture, then there may be disagreements on how much to do it at this particular point in time. Maybe we should postpone it for another few generations. So there may be so many different disagreements, and it may be very difficult to say exactly what is right. So then what do you do? Now everyone's confused. You know, what should we do? That's again why we need brahmanas in society, who can very deeply go into these points and understand. And brahmana means there should be gurus who say, all right, this says this and this says that, and I say this. Okay, you've accepted to be my disciple. All right, I'm telling you like this. And you do like this. Others may do this, this, that, and that, but you do this, and here's why. Therefore, one should hear from one's, if one is thinking to take initiation, one should hear What is being said? Am I able to follow this instruction? Is this instruction the best for my spiritual advancement? Is it concordant with what is in Shastra? What are the teachings of our Acharya, founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada? So it requires intelligence to be a Brahmana, especially to be a Brahmana. Anyone may be initiated and chant the holy names, but if one is going to guide others and understand very deeply what are the teachings of Shastra, then one has to be a Brahmana, and that means also living a sattvic lifestyle, because sattvam sanjayate jnanam, if one is in sattvagun, very calm, peaceful, enlightened, then one can begin to think in a way which is concordant with the ultimate teachings of Shastra. There is no room for personal whims, Srila Prabhupada writes. We must always be guided by the pleasure of the Lord. So that should be there, not by our own whims. Some rascals posing as devotees, they say, well, Krishna, see, I'm a devotee of Krishna. Krishna wants his devotee to be happy. So I like to do this, this, that, and that. So Krishna will be happy if I do it. I like to eat fish. So Krishna gave the fish. God gave the animals to men so that we can enjoy them, we can eat them. This is standard Christian dogma. God gave the animals for us to eat, because he loves us. So, the Brahmana, of course, any Vaishnava, he only eats, as Prabhupada said, for the pleasure of the Lord, means only takes Krishna prasadam. There's no question of being a Brahmana, going out to some kami restaurant and eating, buying some bread from a shop, Yes, it's vegetarian, isn't it? Yeah, okay, all right. Hope so, all right. And, this is not Vaishnav life. What to speak of Brahmana, who's an ideal leader of the human society. So it requires a high standard for this. All right, any question about this? Oh, yeah, that, one thing. You can take a note of this. There is this, among the questions, I'll answer your question. How to respond to a person who says, well, I'm not the very siddhantic type of devotee, but I just love Krishna. And I'm very fallen, but I know that Krishna is very merciful and he accepts my feelings. So how do we reply to this? Well, my reply to this was that there's not much you can say, because the person's not very sincere, actually, to be a disciple. They think, I'm already a devotee because I love Krishna. It's just my feelings which I have for Krishna. They're not very serious about the path of devotional service. They think they're already there. It's Prakriti Sahajiya Bhav. But then we can present to them what is written by our acharyas. For instance, Krishnadas Kaviraj says, Siddhanta bolya chitte na karaha alosh, eha hoite Krishna lage sudiramanosh. Do not be lazy in understanding Siddhanta, that very term which this so-called devotee has derided. I'm not the Siddhantic type. I'm not the Siddhanta. What is that? I just have a feeling for Krishna. So, Krishnadas Kaviraj says that don't be lazy in understanding Siddhanta, because by understanding Siddhanta, the mind becomes very strongly attached to Krishna. And in this theme, following this theme, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, Siddhanta alashchan anartha tacharena. Those who are lazy in understanding Siddhanta, they do not give up anarthas. They remain full of anarthas. And in that purport also, that's Srila Prabhupada quote, no, not in that, that we should also see the verse and the purport, tachchadadhana munayo jnana vairagya yuktaya pashyanti atmani chatmanam bhaktya shuta grihita. Please see this verse and purport from Srimad Bhagavata. Also, please consider the purport of Shuti Smriti Purana Adi Pancharatra Vidhingvina Aikantaki Hare Bhakti Utpata Yaiva Kalpate. That so-called devotional service, which is not based on Shastra, Shuti Smriti Purana Adi Shastra, that is simply a disturbance in society. It's not actually bhakti at all. So please consider the Acharya Vatmanu Gamanam, the purport of this, following the path given by the Acharyas. It's not just I feel, therefore I feel for Krishna. But everything has to be according to the Shastric direction. Yeah, then there's a question. Maharaj, can't you explain us the following statement? Explain to us, I guess that's supposed to mean. Where's the statement from, first of all? I mean, do I have to... otherwise, anyone can bring any statement. It's only worth explaining statements if they're from Shastra and Acharyas. If not, you see, anyone can say anything. And then, what's the... explain it means it's... we should explain authorized statements. But if statements are not from authorized sources, then if you don't understand it, don't bother about it. That's all. Just don't bother. You know, so many people say so many things. But it should be based on, should be from Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. If you don't understand, if there's a statement someone made and you don't understand it, ask them what it, I didn't even read what the statement is. What's the point? Ask them, what is the Shastric basis of this statement? Don't ask me, ask them. Maybe it was a statement by me? Anyway. Yeah. Why? Okay, please give written statements. All right, you have the mic. Can you write yours down? That will save the two hands at once syndrome. I don't think the mic's working. You have to turn it off.
You said no question of forgiving a person if he's not willing
No question of?
Forgiving a person if he's not willing to change.
If he's not willing to change.
How does a devotee react to people who are not willing to change?
Because how does a devotee react to people who are not willing to change? Well, it may, you can't say exactly in every situation. There is, Lord Balaram said in relation to the Kauravas. So that's another example of the Pandavas and the Kauravas coming together against the Yadus. When the Samba kidnapped Lakshmana, the daughter of Duryodhana. So the Kauravas didn't want to... They didn't want to compromise with the Yadus. So then Balaram said, what is that? Naguro Pashavo Yata. Then they don't want to listen to reason, then beat them with a stick like an animal. It's Balaram, he's acting as a Kshatriya. But that's punishment is there if one is in a position to do so. Otherwise avoid those who, if people don't want to hear, then there's no use to tell them, is there? That's general principle. It may be different. in different situations. There may be various ways you can induce people to do that which is good for them if they don't want to take direct instruction. Yeah. Please throw some light on chastisement, blasphemy, and constructive criticism. It's a big topic. I have a book called My Memories of Srila Prabhupada, in which strong speaking in Srila Prabhupada's service, there's one section. I've just revised that book. Soon it will be reprinted, in which I discuss these things. Chastisement, as Srila Prabhupada used the term, that's generally... that's said to be to rebuke someone or to speak strongly to them for the purpose of pointing out their fault, for reforming them. Or it may not reform them, but it may point out their rascaldom to others who might be otherwise influenced to follow their rascaldom. Blasphemy means that someone has got good qualities and one is envious of them and therefore criticizes them. Constructive criticism, that means to point out the fault with the aim of rectifying it. In brief, it's a big subject. There's a lot of fluffy stuff going around in our movement in the name of you shouldn't criticize anyone. But this is a ridiculous proposition. You shouldn't see any fault. But if you don't see any fault, how are you going to say who's fit for initiation, who's not? No one's got any fault. And then they don't even need initiation because they're already perfect. And in the name of not pointing out faults, often... this is how this guy on the hill got in the position he was. I mean, at one point, some people were saying, look, this man's doing wrong. I said, no, he's a good Vaishnava. And then they let him get in this position. If it, in the name of being a good Vaishnava, this man on the hill got in the position he is. He took advantage of this, no, you shouldn't say anything against a Vaishnava. So... this is simply sentimental to say that you should. No one should ever speak any bad about a Vaishnava at any time. It's unrealistic. Can you throw some light? That's a popular phrase around here. On why Prabhupada wanted that women should not be sent to school for education. Won't they be ill-treated in society? Everyone's ill-treated in society. If you want more about that, I'm not going to speak about that at length now. On my website, you can download, there's a three-part seminar called Women, Masters or Mothers. So you can listen to that if you want to know in detail. It's available here in DVD that you can purchase. It doesn't mean that women are necessarily uneducated, but they don't go to school. That's all. School is not the only place for education.
When we criticize someone, how do we know?
Ill-treated in society, sending them to school is ill-treatment in the first place. Sending anyone to school is ill treatment. And sending boys and girls together so they're looking at each other and joking with each other. This is just plain uncivilized, that's all. Looking, joking, and then it gets more intense. And now then you get in the West the situation where they arrange abortion services for the schoolgirls. And it's illegal for the teachers to tell the parents of the girls. That's what you get. That's what it ends up in. totally mad, totally sinful. Anyway, go on. Okay, just tell me and I'll repeat it here. Can someone, who's the technical expert around here? Try and work it out. When we point out a mistake or criticize someone, how do we know whether it's an aparad? Look at your own intent. It may be taken as an offense, even if it's not meant to be offensive. But that may be the foolishness of the person. If you say something for their own good and they become angry, then that's their own foolishness. All right, yeah. There's a big topic around here. Huh? In such a situation where the person who? The person we're finding faults with. I mean, don't find faults. Fault finding is not good. Don't go looking for faults. But if they become apparent and it's a disturbance to others and it's an obstacle in that own devotee's advancement, then it's only kindness or proper to try to rectify that. You know, if someone like regularly they come in the temple room when their breath is smelling of garlic, for instance, and someone should say something. They don't have to like shout at him and yell at him, but they could just, you know, excuse me, sir, but you're coming every day and it's actually an offense mentioned in Shastra, so please either stop eating garlic or take, what is this, mukvas before you come, or eat your garlic 3 hours or something before you come. But please, you know, you should say something. It's better to say something. Here's someone brought it up to me that in Russia, there was someone coming to, they had their Nam Hatha meeting in their apartment in one place in Russia. And then one person would come every time drunk, every time he would come drunk. But he didn't cause a disturbance. He'd just go and sit there and he'd chant a bit and he'd smell of alcohol. And, you know, he'd look like an alcoholic, and he'd take prasad at the end. And sometimes he'd talk some nonsense, as drunken people often do. But he wasn't grossly harmful. So there was a discussion among the devotees, should we let him come or not? And some were saying, well, he doesn't do any harm, and he's taking prasadam, so why not? And others were saying that, look, we're trying to get new people to come, and they come and there's this drunk, crazy guy stinking, and you know, first impressions are lasting, so better, you know, give the guy some, tell him, you come back after 2 hours, we'll give you some prasad outside the door. So there was a discussion, no, he'll miss the kirtan. So how do you decide? I would say, in the name of being merciful to someone who's not going to take, not very likely to take out Krishna consciousness very seriously, because he's a hardened alcoholic, better you don't put off others who may are more likely to be serious. So what's merciful? Is it merciful to let the drunk in and turn others away? Turn off others? You have to consider. When they asked me, I said, don't let the drunk in. Keep him out. Yeah, then. How long is this session supposed to go on for? You all want to take prasadam? Is it? Is it no reply? Is it like unlimited or what? Time 10 o'clock is the cutoff time, is it? Yeah. Okay.
Maharaj, if a devotee commits offense unknowingly, can it be considered as the will of the Lord?
You mean the Lord wants us to make offenses? The Lord's arranging for that? very difficult to ascertain the cause. That may happen even to great devotees. Unknowingly they make an offense. That story is there in Bhakti Ratnaka, how Rupa Goswami, in his meditation, was seeing pastimes of Radha and Krishna, and he laughed at seeing some funny incident. And at that time, a Vaishnava was present who his body was crippled. So he thought, Rupa Goswami's laughing at me. And then Rupa Goswami, he couldn't see Radha and Krishna anymore in his meditation. He thought, what happened? Did I make some offense? Actually, he did make an offense. But Rupa Goswami can never make an offense. But because that obviously neophyte devotee, you have to be an extremely neophyte to think that Rupa Goswami made some offense to me. But he felt that Rupa Goswami was laughing at me. So, well, you could say, yeah, that's arranged by the Leela Shakti of the Lord. Otherwise, the feelings of a neophyte devotee can never affect a great Mahabhagavat like Rupa Goswami. So we can say that's arranged by the Leela Shakti of the Lord. Just to show that. There are so many things we can understand from this. Yeah. Okay, so I'll finish there. Hare Krishna. Thank you for your patience in listening. Recently in Tamil Nadu, we had a 7-day camp, Shravan Kirtan camp, lots of philosophical lectures for 7 days. I was surprised and pleased that so many devotees, they sat and listened for 7 days and they were happy to do so. That's good. There's still hope. People have inclination for that. But then why only 7 days? Why not 365 days? That can be. You don't have to spend all your life working for Kripana Durajana. You're not obliged by any law of the state or law of God. It's just a social convention.